KBOO Portland.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Trippy Politics Protest and
Potpourri. Welcome and thank you for tuning in. We have a fun potpourri themed episode for you today. Let's talk about some green.
Sit right back, enjoy, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll just jump right into this one. There's been quite a few different like stories recently about cannabis, pot, both locally and nationally. Actually, I'll just pass it right on to you, Les. Which topic do you want to tackle first?
Let's start the Facebook. Do you know about the Facebook being sued by some dispensaries right now?
I saw that posting earlier, but I was in the middle of something, so I didn't get a chance to read over it.
So I found this article by the Daily Leaf. It's pretty cool. It says that 7 Oklahoma dispensaries are actually suing Facebook because they are being put in, quote, Facebook jail for their ads. Something about their business Facebook doesn't like, and they're sort of inhibiting their ability to promote their business and have pages and content. So they actually say that they want the social media giant to be compelled by the court to stop blocking the business from promoting their shops on the platform, which seems pretty valid.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I haven't personally really dealt with Facebook's rules and regulations myself. I think one time in the past I was covering like a music festival and I tried posting a video and there was some copyright infringement thing that Facebook was making a fuss about, and it took literally a week after I was done reporting on that thing for that video to finally get past them. So thanks, Facebook.
I can't think of anything in particular I've had to worry about. It's just something that I've seen a lot, scrolling through ads or being in groups. I'm part of a few groups on Facebook. That's often talked about, how sorts of shops and businesses, growers, just trying to reach out and ask questions, and their business gets blocked.
Yeah, see, I don't understand this one fully. Could there have been something in their advertisement or something that, because I mean, there's plenty of Facebook groups I've seen that are centered around cannabis, pot, and never have any issues. What is it about a business that's advertising that seems to be the issue here?
Well, it's interesting because even as this Daily Leaf Deals article mentions, in October of last year, Facebook seemed to have softened its stance when it announced that it would start allowing verified legal cannabis companies to use its platform. But it seems like if these 7 dispensaries, the first one was Ye Olde Apothecary Shop. Of course, the rest of them joined in July of this year. And they're saying that they can't do that. They can't advertise their business, and they are legally verified businesses in their state. And it creates that kind of conflict. It just seems like a continuing problem. And people say it's legal now and it's everywhere. But is it really? And how, if you're on the other side of that, if you're trying to be part of that industry, it seems like it's not that easy.
Yeah. I myself don't know how many ads I see for like dispensaries, for like equipment, for grow shops or stuff like that. Head shops. I don't know how many I see them really on Facebook. Do you? I mean, I once in a while see some for like genetic testings.
And that's the thing. Occasionally there are some ads. Their lawsuit addresses that. The petition of the plaintiff states that Facebook has an arbitrary, discriminatory, and subjective policy, which is archaic and doesn't apply uniformly to all. The 7 dispensaries also claim that the implementation of that policy appears to be random, and that there is no one at the platform who can be contacted if someone or a business has a concern. And that seems to be pretty legitimate to me, that if you're saying, hey, we're going to, you know, not allow you to market your business, then that business should have recourse. You have the ability to talk to someone and say, well, why aren't you allowing me to have my business?
See, and I don't know why, but this kind of pops into my head when I'm hearing this story. And it's like, I don't know if you heard of Portland's Finest over here when the Trailblazers were playing, and Mike Bibbins' story about how the dispensary tried using the Trailblazers logo for merchandise for their shop and got in trouble.
Oh, interesting. I'm not sure if I heard of that one.
Yeah, they took the Blazers logo and put it on the front of their t-shirt and then just said Blazed or something like across the it with like their logo underneath the wording in the center of the Blazers logo or something like that.
I can picture that. That would definitely be an issue.
And like Mike Bibbins,
journalist, right?
Yeah, Mike actually was walking by there, I guess. And he's just like, yeah, I was walking by, I see that. I'm like, wait a minute, Trailblazers merchandise in a dispensary? So yeah, it sparked his interest to see what was going on there.
And that's the problem with logos and branding and stuff like that when it comes to marketing. There are plenty of cases that have cropped up at times. I think Gorilla Glue, there was a case against Gorilla Glue being used.
Yeah.
That company, I believe, lost. I don't really, without trying to do an internet search, I'm trying to remember because that was years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then I don't know if it's the same thing you're talking about, but they were getting really angry about really upset about some of the names of the strains out there.
Yeah,
like Girl Scout cookies
being
and
one
cream.
Of them.
Yeah.
Well, they're like Skittles. There are some called like blue Skittles or green Skittles or something. And these strain names are close to infringement on other brands. And that becomes a little bit of a legal quagmire.
Well, that was one of the issues there. And but the other one they were trying to say was, well, I mean, it becomes more attractive to children. And it's like,
Yeah, and that's an interesting issue that tails into something else because they are children and we do need to be, you know, respectful about how we raise them as a community. You know, to raise a village, it takes a village. Children are impacted by not just their immediate family, but they're impacted by what's in the surrounding environment. However, on the flip side of that coin, that is the real world that they are going to grow up into and be adults in. The environment around them, you can't hide them from the world. You can't make children-only zones and say children can never see any of the existence of these objects that we dislike until they're adults. And then we'll expose them because then you kind of forget about the psychology of that. You're doing that future adult a disservice because they didn't get to process and learn when they're in that development stage to do that.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, kids are impressionable, but, I mean, what age do we really start setting memories about some of this stuff?
That is individually based. Science says there's certain ranges, but every person is unique. I mean, we have a different genetic code for each of us.
I mean, who's to really say that, like, a 5-6-year-old's going to be imprinted on by some of that stuff? Or
even if it is, the way you go about that content matters. So if you have a four-year-old, say, that's not even in school yet. You have a four-year-old that's spending time around adults that are constantly voicing concerns and fears and negative worries about cannabis. That's what the child's going to pick up. They're still learning about cannabis. They're still exposed. And in fact, the person that exposed them was a parent or whoever was in their close community. And they did it in a negative and harmful way when instead we have the opportunity of just allowing it to exist in society. And as that child grows up among society, they happen to notice it. It's one of the things that's part of society instead of a real focus for them.
I think this is all attached to, you know, the taboo that was connected to the cannabis, to the plant for so long and the war on drugs and whatnot. And that this is stuff that's still just lingering when it comes to this.
I mean, there's been a lot of harm from that. There's been a lot of recorded harm from the war on drugs. But when it comes to children, I think we are a little too worried. When people start crying, think about the children, let's worry about the children. Sometimes that's valid, but I tend to stop and look twice. This is actually a topic that's going on in Portland because...
Oh, yes. The dispensary over in Selwood. So, electric lettuce.
Yes.
So there was a preschool somewhere out there. It's called Creative Minds or something like that. And it's a preschool. And so there's like a whole bunch of different regulations and whatnot. Something about, and this is from an article I'm reading here for titled Portland Commissioner Amanda Fritz lectures his parent who doesn't want the cannabis dispensary next to his daughter's kindergarten. Even though that's not a kindergarten, it's actually a preschool. This one is by Katie Shepherd.
And you know that because you looked that up, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, I Googled it. And then I clicked on their website. I went deep into their...
Went to the actual
everything
website.
About there, and they say they're a preschool. They don't say they're K-12.
What was the name of that school again?
Creative Minds.
Creative Minds was the school, and they're worried about electric lettuce.
Yeah, it's called the Creative Minds Learning Center. Yeah, according to this, electric lettuce's plans were first reported by Willamette Week's news partner, K2TV. And since then, Selwood residents have been grousing about the proposed dispensary proximity to the preschool and also a toy store called Oodles for Kids. It's specifically coming from a father named Gregory Hemmen. And he sat there and he was making a fuss about it because, like, I guess there is state regulations that say that a dispensary can't be anywhere within 1,000 feet from, like, a K-12. But it, according to those laws too, it doesn't include preschools. So electric lettuce in all legalities around the state regulations and whatnot are in the right. And this father and the others that are in that neighborhood are sitting there pushing back on it saying, you know, we don't want our kids exposed to it, yada, yada, yada. I have another article up here from Pamplin Media. And this one's specifically from the Selwood Bee.
Oh, right. Yeah, that covers the neighborhood.
Yes. And this one was from August 30th. And it's basically stating neighbors protest new Selwood pot shop near preschool. This one was done by David Ashton. And this one's actually pretty good because he does clarify specifically that it is a preschool, even though the father, Gregory Hemmen, tries to say that Creative Minds is a K-12, which... I don't know why he'd be making that kind of a bold statement.
Is it possible that school, Creative Minds, has other branches or other locations, properties that do other grades?
Possibly.
And it's maybe this location only handles the preschool portion of it.
It's a private preschool, so they're paying excessive amounts of money.
Obviously, that tells you a lot about the class of the people. You can afford to pay a lot of money for that fancy preschool.
And there's a photo in this article. It's showing a whole bunch of parents and kids basically standing out front of, assuming the preschool, and it's basically a sign saying, "We no wanna your marijuana, no pot for tots."
Did you see the petition?
Cannabis isn't for kids. I haven't read the petition yet.
You didn't see the petition? Well, there is a petition. That was one thing I had seen from the article that I read. And it's by a group called StopGroundworksIndustries.org. It's saying that we are concerned neighbors of the community. And it wasn't very specific, you know, who, if they have businesses, what neighbors, how big of the community, how close, how many people. There was an email address linked to that, but that was about it. It did suggest otherwise that you enter in your personal information to join this petition.
See, me personally, I'm kind of to the same point I was making a little while ago. I mean, how old do you have to be for stuff to be imprinted? And also, I mean, if these kids are sitting there, these parents seem to, like, think or have it in their mind that the cannabis or the pot's just going to be shoved in their kid's face. Like, here, smoke, yada, 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 you want to use, like... No, that's not what's happening. Unless they have an ID proving they're 21 years or older, they ain't getting inside anywhere near that shop, really.
I want to point out that in so much of our media and images, movies, TV, everything going on, you've got people going and grabbing a beer, a glass of wine,
alcohol,
drinks,
cigarettes.
You've got bottles on the wall behind people. You've got snifters and decanters full of various amber liquids and fancy business offices. It's a very common background theme. And if that was supplanted with cannabis, the cultural mindset about that
would shift
similarly. It's how we treat it now, with the fact that we criminalize it, that we criminalize the people that have been associated or that we might suspect are associated with cannabis. That is what we've been teaching on, and that is the problem.
See, and that, I don't know if you remember this, but for the longest time in TV and movies, you'd always see, like, actors smoking a cigarette. it's very rare to see anymore because that was the standard. Yes, there was a standard that was passed on that one. There's not one on the alcohol. I don't know if there's a full standard on cannabis-related materials, but, I mean, How High, Friday, all these movies.
Some classic Cheech and Chong. Cheech and Chong. No, that was back in the 70s they were doing that. No. And smoking grass.
Yes, and that's 50 years old now. And yet these parents are still making a fuss about this.
Oh, and you got Elon Musk smoking a joint with Joe Rogan. You've got UFC's Nate Diaz, who smoked a joint during a public workout. That was a Ganjapreneur article that I ran across. Did you see that?
Yeah, actually, I don't know if you saw my comment on Facebook to your posting of that, but it was basically stating that, yeah, there is a, it was like, I don't know if it was a year or 2 years ago, but there was actually a movement that was created to remove THC from the tested listings for drugs within the UFC and a few others. And I believe it's actually no longer tested for, because it, you know, there's been a lot of therapeutic stuff that's been published in studies that have been shown that THC, CBD specifically, maybe even a mix of the two, are very good for pain relief and muscle relaxation and stuff like that. And that's, you know, kind of the stuff that these people need when they're coming out of fights is recovery. There was also one, because I listened to a lot of Joe Rogan, he was talking recently about how within the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu community, there was actually like a subset of people that practice while stoned after having smoked, because it actually helps you enter into a better meditative state.
I took the moment to go and look up that petition. So that petition I was talking about, the Selwood Dispensary, they acknowledge that Portland prohibits pot dispensaries from operating within 1,000 feet of a K-12 school, but does not have a distance requirement from preschools. They then tried to do the bandwagon effect by mentioning what the rules are in Washington State. Oh, look, you know, this wouldn't happen in Washington State. And mentioned that Washington State has a 1,000-foot buffer from preschools, childcare centers, or in Gresham, Oregon City, Tigard, or other Oregon cities. So it mentions a lot of things. But then it has this nice little blurb at the bottom that says, because this preschool provides full-day kindergarten, that the city has illegally permitted this electric lettuce location. I have to wonder where they got that information over again, because you said you looked it up online and they don't have kindergarten services at this location.
It says preschool.
It says just preschool.
Yeah.
Because they cite a code too as well. I was very curious.
That's by that father, Gregory Hammond, because they used part of his quote here in this article. Although you never know
how
some of these reportings come out. It's kind of causes some mix up. Yeah. According to this, there's a...
It says this site was created by concerned neighbors, parents, and residents of the Selwood neighborhood in Southeast Portland.
Yeah, and in this article from the one, the parents protest, it's got quoting somebody named Michelle Forbes. I represent people in the neighborhood who are concerned about this marijuana dispensary being put in right next to a toy store and just down the street from a preschool. Hmm. Now, the fact that she decides to use the word marijuana points towards her mindset, I believe.
It is interesting when you notice when people only use that term, that it shows where their research and information comes from.
I only say it in some terms, sometimes because of the fact that it's a familiar word to some people.
Right, because other people are going to recognize it.
Cannabis might not be one that they fully have heard in the past or whatnot, but I mean, it's in everything. Look at the word canvas.
Right. Isn't that a Dutch word that Swedish something?
It's made from cannabis fibers.
Right. Canavas is the root word. Something I read years ago. It was the coolest thing, because that's when I found out that every inch, every meter of rope on this globe was produced from this plant, pretty much.
Yep.
That's what made other types of rope so special. It was just rope. They just called it rope. If it was made from this plant, it was, and that was everywhere. And you would, like, oh my gosh, miles worth of rope. I mean, on one giant galleon ship, I mean, in the 17th century. So when you think about how much this plant was everywhere and was used for everything, canvas was like tarps. They used canvas for everything. For that's what artwork. They had on top of the Oregon Trail wagons.
Now think of, well, yes, and more than that, think about every single piece of masterpiece artwork that is in the Louvre, that is in our museums. And these same with are sitting on hemp. Produced canvas.
Hemp papers as well. We have that in our own history for this particular country. Some of our historical documents around, you know, becoming a country.
Our Declaration of Independence is written on hemp. Yes.
And that was even mentioned in that really famous movie, National Treasure, wasn't it?
Yes. And then I believe some of the first dollar bills that were created were also made out of hemp paper.
That's, I think, where the concept from our paper money came from, was that the paper money isn't really paper like we use today. It's not the wood pulp. It's not tree pulp fibers. It was like the herd, the really tough, stringy stuff from these really fast-growing plants, the hemp back in the day, the cannabis.
I believe it was, yeah.
And now we call it cannabis with a B instead of a V, or people are familiar with marijuana with a J, which is a slur word racially derived, of course, mm-hmm. from the war on drugs that started in the Prohibition in 1930s, because those from, you know, Central America called it marijuana with an H. And if you look back in the historical documents, this is what confuses people, is there's so many different spellings of this word and different ways it's referenced. And makes it very hard to track through all of this because people don't know how to find all the different ways.
And whoever it was back in the day that also made these laws against marijuana also was either really confused or had gotten some bad information, because marijuana and cannabis are two different plants.
I think that's a stretch to assume what was going on.
Marijuana,
if you want to do that, you'd also have to add in the possibility that that person was intentionally creating misinformation on purpose in order to corner the market. There was an advantage to whomever was in the position to cause influence to create the laws prohibiting marijuana in the first place, and then making sure that we also eradicated the knowledge of it, that several generations worth of people were genuinely brainwashed. Every time someone was convinced that this plant did something positive, they were attacked. The other parts of their life were brought to pieces. And then everyone would then somehow play the blame game and say, oh, it's because of this plant. And that's where the scare movies, that pot craze movies all come from, you know.
Did you recently hear about the vape death that they're trying to connect to cannabis?
Well, right. But there's been a number of different vape deaths of mysterious circumstances. And from some of what I read, the bigger concern was that they were illicit cartridges, that they're basically empty cartridges that somebody is refilling on the side market, that they haven't gone through official one-time use processes. When people are repurposing these cartridges, they're degrading and falling apart and becoming a safety hazard to someone smoking on them.
I believe that's actually what is happening there. Because, I mean, if you get one of these out of a dispensary and then you're having those kind of issues,
if you get out of a dispensary, most places, like in the state of Oregon, if you go and buy a cannabis cartridge, they're going to give you a receipt and say, hey, if it's defective, the law says you have this amount of time. I think it's usually about 7 days or so that you can come back with the receipt and you exchange it for the same thing. You don't just get your money back. It's not a deal here, but you can get it replaced, because if there's something wrong, they want you to be able to enjoy what you spent your money on.
I also have to wonder that this person, because it's actually like being pushed here in Oregon by one of the senators, I think it was Wyden, is pushing for regulation on the vapes and cannabis vapes, and it's all because of some death, and it was connected somehow, because according to some conjecture or some anecdotal, the person had been smoking on a cannabis vape not long before their death. But I also have to ask if they weren't vaping weed juice, tobacco juice, out of like a regular vape pen or whatever they want to call it, and one of those big things anymore.
Right, those large units.
Yeah, I'm betting you they were smoking on that. And because there are on ways. The cannabis, and they weren't sitting there being like, oh, it was the tobacco, it was the e-juice. The e-juice is gross. There is so much extra garbage in some of that e-juice.
I haven't looked into all of the e-juices. And to be honest, there's so many different when it comes to cannabis cartridges. So many different companies that it's hard to determine how they're doing that. And they keep changing the name. As you know, if you've been into a shop recently, you'll start looking at some of these cartridges. And instead of just saying this is pot and THC of these percentages, stuff that now is getting more mainstream knowledge, people understand what a CBD number is, what THCA kind of references. What they aren't really talking about is, well, there's honestly, my brain just filled up with a dozen things. There's so many things that they're not talking about. But there isn't a lot of regulation in the sense of testing these products, what is really in them, the name of them, what they're comprised out of, because now you have either distillate, do you have CO2, do you have live resin? All of these things are now on the packages. And that's what I was getting at, is that people don't know what all that means anymore. It's a lot more information every time they go in to buy something, and nobody knows what it means. And it's up to the people in the dispensaries to teach the customers, the consumers. However, those people in the dispensaries are self-teaching, and they're all teaching one another in the dispensaries. And that teaching knowledge needs to come from the people that are putting the money out, that have the money to market their products. If you can make 24 types of stickers within a year to distribute to every dispensary in the state, and you're going to book a booth at every single related event and expo and hire people, and you've got advertisements in places, then you have the kind of marketing budget to actually inform people real information of what's going on. Because customers are very confused when they go into stores. They're very different at every dispensary. You have no idea if you're going to pay tax at one or not. You don't know if you're going to get percentages for THCA and CBD, THC, CBN, CBGs. Some labs will test for these other cannabinoids, CBDs and CBGs. Most don't, because it's so expensive test.
And that's another topic that I don't know how many weeks ago that me and you were talking about as well. The labs here in Oregon that are falsifying THC levels, supposedly.
I thought that was Washington.
Was it Washington?
I thought that was Washington State. They were falsifying that. That there was the Washington, Oregon both have boards that control cannabis now. That kind of goes with the liquor commissions.
OLCCs and Washington's.
Right. Washington's liquor control board that does pot now is the one I believe that looked into that and some other investigative reporting.
Oregon's actually split into two parts. The medical one is overran by the Oregon Health Authority, and the recreational is the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. And I believe it is a similar setup up in Washington as well. Yeah, that's why there's so many different regulations when it comes to, like, when a medical card holder goes into a dispensary, they can get 8 ounces a day, whereas a recreational user can only get an ounce. But, I mean, honestly, who needs an ounce in a day? there's a lot going on here that I'm trying to, like, wrap my head around. Like, this one of the biggest quops this guy, Gregory Hemmen, over there in Selwood was saying, you know, that it's becoming way too thick in Portland. There's so many dispensaries and all that. Honestly, there's more bars and liquor stores in Portland than there are dispensaries, and that's gross in my opinion.
Yeah, see, I think it was the Washington State. I found a Leafly article that was discussing some of the testing.
Yeah,
I don't think it's the same article that you and I had talked about before when we were just chatting.
Yeah, I think the one I was talking about was like out of High Times or something like that.
Right, but it has to do with this whole situation because of that. This Leafly article, this actually came out in July, and it was mentioning that Rick Garza, the executive director of the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board, the LCB, told The Stranger in February, as state lawmakers were moving to revoke the agency's oversight over testing labs amid the widespread industry and consumer concerns. And those concerns are exactly what we were mentioning, that they weren't always testing the right numbers. Some of these labs were actually completely fabricating numbers. Sometimes they wouldn't test the pot at all. They would just put in a really good number if it came back 12% THC, they would say, oh, no, that's not good. We can't accept that. We can't sell that.
Yeah,
so they would actually fake the number and fudge it and say, oh, let's double it. Let's do this. Let's
the article I was
do
reading,
something and fake the test.
The article I was reading was pretty much saying that it's like for a producer of cannabis, if it's anything under 20%, it's pretty much a loss to them. And so there's like a lot of labs that'll sit there and like actually, I don't know if they're taking bribe money or what, but supposedly they are boasting or falsifying the levels of THC, like sometimes double, like you said, sometimes even more. My mom recently was telling me she found a strain of pot that was 40% THC.
See, that another issue is not just the percentage of the cannabinoids, which is a definite issue because everybody wants accurate information, but actually like what's in the pot. These labs are supposed to be testing for safety. They're supposed to make sure that this is okay to consume, that the guy growing the weed
to the
dispensary isn't like watering his weed with dirty water that has oil and nasty stuff in it, or toxic metals
They're supposed to be checking for mold. They're supposed to be checking for pesticides. They're supposed to be checking for proper flushing of the buds, because if you leave even just like tiniest bit of nitrogen fertilizer inside the bud, it can cause issues with the lungs.
It can, right. And that there's actually been known cases of stuff like that when people have had issues. It's usually been exacerbated by another scenario. Like they already had asthma or some other issue. And that just
it
made it evident.
And see, I still have, because when I was homeless for several years, I ended up giving myself tuberculosis a couple times. And I have some slight lung scarring. And I smoke pot, bud, and I smoke sometimes on the vape. But I will only do vape if it's the crystal distillates. The stuff that's been super, super finely refined to try and pull out as much stuff as possible. And that's because I feel that's probably the best for my lungs. I don't want all the extra garbage that might be in there.
See, yeah, California did the right thing. California did that. They made a law, I think it was all the way back in July 1st, 2018, when everything became legal.
Okay.
Right? So they decided that you had to test for that. And when companies were required to, they said, hey, we've got recalls to make. This hasn't passed. We need that batch that just went out to the dispensary. We need that back.
See,
we're becoming more responsible because now they were required to. And it just was part of the daily business they had to deal with.
And I know online I've been reading a lot of articles about this cartridge brand called Dank Cartridge. Dank carts or whatever.
I haven't heard of Dank cart, no.
So Dank only makes the boxes, but apparently people have been buying Dank cartridges that are filled with oil online. And Dank doesn't make the oils, they don't make the vape tips or whatever. They don't do those. They only make the boxes, which are really cool designs actually, but like, they were sitting there pretty much when there was people saying they were getting sick off Dank cartridges. Like, Dank, their company, actually released saying, we don't make cartridges. We only make the boxes. Something's not adding up here, pretty much. So that there was counterfeit cartridges being thrown into these Dank boxes and thrown out onto the market. And
that's unfortunate, because no matter what industry, no matter where you are, what you're doing, you're always going to have those kinds of scammers.
Yeah.
And this is true everywhere, honestly.
Unfortunately. Actually, and this kind of helps maybe segue into the next one, was there was actually a robbery of a grower up there in Kelso, Washington.
I remember you telling me about this, but yes. I didn't read any info. Tell me what you know.
So the one that I found was, it's up there in Kelso, Washington, and it was $250,000 in cannabis stolen from a Kelso producer. So yeah.
You can go from this into banking.
So yeah, thieves cut into Kelso facility, steal 250K's worth of cannabis. This was up in Kelso, Washington. So this was like in the middle of the night, five thieves broke into Cascade Mountain Cannabis. They stole So surveillance video shows the burglars cut a hole through the back of the building and head to a room where the plants are left to dry, where they stuff 150 pounds of cannabis into bags over the course of 2 hours. These guys spent 2 hours in that building clearing out dried cannabis on wires that have been sitting there dried.
That is a long time inside of a building. How did...
No, it gets even creepier than that, okay? Because this was literally a crop from that season, and it was their main crop. They had... The security system did not go off after these guys cut through the wall.
So you think they disabled the security system when they cut through the wall,
There's belief that it was somebody in the inside job. Yes.
Had knowledge of how to disable that security system, or that would be some very good legwork before the heist. That's like Ocean's 11 stuff, trying to figure out what brand safety system they have to cut through that.
Roberts,
they didn't have inside help. I don't know. That's
this woman, Courtney Roberts, is co-owner of Cascade Mountain Cannabis. And Roberts said the business had operated at its current location for 3 years without incident. She said the security system's motion detection cameras did not trigger an alarm.
The motion detection cameras did not trigger an alarm.
But the cameras did manage to capture the faces of the thieves. So, they didn't trigger the alarm, but they did trigger the record function of the camera.
That was probably on a different circuit, different type of file. Interesting. Wow.
Some of these guys were wearing Oregonian shirts. One thief was a woman. Yeah, they're offering like a
How many thieves were there? Is that
five.
Like five?
Five.
A whole group.
Yes, a whole group of them came in.
And what, like, did they get the vehicle they came in and the like plates information on that at all?
I don't think so, because I don't think they had a camera right outside that wall where they pulled up. And that's another thing. I mean, they had literally just had cropped this, and it had been sitting there and drying for a few days, and it was just about to be pulled down the next day. And then those people came, cut a hole into the wall, somehow did not set off the alarm with the motion detectors.
Right.
But yet triggered the cameras to record them sitting there clearing out the facility.
Right. Definitely. I mean, that...
It screams inside job.
How much money did they take as well as the pot, or did they just take the pot?
They just got access to the pot. That was the only room they were able to get access to. It was like the back corner room of the facility.
Well, the reason I bring that up is because pot thievery, stealing the goods and taking the green and running is something that, you know, the average, you know, dealer that's been selling weed for decades has to worry about, you know. And somebody just coming and taking the money is something that people have to worry about now. Like, legitimate businesses are now having to worry about real safety risks.
Yeah.
Just like this was a legitimate business, and then their cash may not have been taken, but their crop was. There is a big, however, issue that I want to bring up, and it has to do with the banking of that, because the amount of money that goes in these dispensaries is enormous. And there was something that I wanted to read off, an article I actually found. It's called Cannabis and Banking. What happened at the Senate hearing? This is a dailyleafdeals.com article, and it's August 5th, written by Dane Whitman. And I found it rather interesting. Give me a moment. I'm going to read this for you. Public safety and the problems of doing business in cash took center stage last month during an unprecedented U.S. Senate committee hearing that could be a major step in solving one of the cannabis industry's biggest headaches, banking. The Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs hearing, titled Challenges for Cannabis and Banking, Outside Perspectives, brought lawmakers, financiers, and anti-legalization lobbyists together to discuss the possible pitfalls and benefits of implementing the Safe Banking Act. That Safe Banking Act would provide legal protection to financial institutions serving the cannabis industry. In his opening remarks, Senator Mike Crapo, the Idaho Republican who chairs the committee, said that because of fear of retribution from federal authorities, quote, many banks have stopped providing financial services to members of these lawful industries for no reason other than political pressure, which takes the guise of regulatory and enforcement scrutiny, end quote.
That guy's kind of right. What was his name?
That was Senator Mike Crapo, C-R-A-P-O.
Oh, okay.
He's an Idaho Republican.
I just wanted you to say that last name again.
You know, whatever your name is, if you've got the right sense of logic about something,
I know.
I want to hear what you have to say. So Senator Sherrod Brown, the Ohio Democrat, added some context with an emphasis on how workers in industry are affected by a lack of banking services. Quote, the legal cannabis industry is one of the fastest growing in the United States and employs hundreds of thousands of people, many of whom are represented by unions like the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union. No matter how you feel about marijuana itself, he underscored, we have a duty to look out for the workers in this industry in the communities they represent. Brown argued that forcing workers to operate in the shadows not only puts a robbery target on the back of workers, but also adversely affects their socioeconomic stability. And I think that's pretty obvious. He gets into that when he says getting paid in cash means it's difficult to get a credit card, to prove your income, to get a loan, or even to keep your personal bank account. That can force workers to turn to shady outfits like payday lenders and check cashing services that charge high fees and interest rates. And those places, in turn, can trap people in a cycle of debt and make low-income people even poorer. Companies or workers that have found a bank willing to handle new business often pay really high fees and are limited to only the most basic financial services. So there's a whole bunch of people that addressed this. So Colorado Republican Senator Cory Gardner, he also pushed Congress to act with urgency.
I like his first name.
Of course, you share that. He was another one that really wanted to get more state legal businesses operating with banking services and getting an understanding how to bridge the conflict between the state and the federal laws regarding that. So he says 33 states have legalized medical marijuana. 11 allow regulated adult use. It's happening in the bluest of blue states, the reddest of red, and in Colorado, the purplest of purples. Gardner named several others, and he continues. It's the states that are leading on this issue, and the federal government has failed to respond. It has closed its eyes and has plugged its ears and is pretending and hoped the issue will just go away, but it won't. There's a disconnect between the federal and state cannabis laws, and that's something that Gardner said, Cory Gardner, and I think that's something that everyone that I've heard has been saying that for years in the industry, yeah. And people that are just coming into it now, is that we're more knowledgeable than we give ourselves credit for, and we're not giving good, valid credit to the people that have the lived experience on what works and what doesn't work. And sometimes those are the people without the money. Those are the people with a rough record. Those are the people from disenfranchised communities, because these disenfranchised people, they're the ones that are getting more of the criminal record. They're the ones that are not getting the jobs because of a little bit of cannabis. But if you have a lot of money, if you are an affluent white person or affluent white male with money, you don't have to worry about that as much. You can hire a lawyer. You can pay off the fines. You can get things wiped from your records. You can afford to miss work to go to court dates. You can afford to get a different job and to lose this one. But historically, that's not true for people of color. And I think that when it comes to keeping people safe, when it comes to pot, I think we can all agree on that, like, cannabis is there to relax people, mm-hmm. to help them feel better. There's a reason why it has been authorized for so many states for medical use, because it helps.
There's a reason the human body has an endocannabinoid system that is not only existent in the brain, but also the gut biome. Just saying.
No, definitely. A lot of people don't know about that. I do. You and I both know that. We met years ago and are probably the one most common thread is the cannabis,
yeah.
Is that we were at a place here in Portland. There was music, there was a lot of things going on, but there was a cannabis theme to it. And we just were hanging out. We're saying, hi, how you doing? Yeah. And we just started talking one day and we made a friend.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what cannabis does. It just says, hi, how you doing? Let's relax and get to know each other. And
see, and me personally, I have no issue letting people know that I smoke or anything like that, because honestly, it's kind of my way of keeping myself calm. I'm a little too hyperactive. I'm a little bit too on edge at times, and I need to smoke to relax. Hell, I roll around with glasses that have pot leaf holograms in them. My stepbrother, who is a programmer down in California, has sat there and complained at me when his 5-year-old son was around and I had them on. And I was like, does he know what they are? No, he thinks they're palm trees. And well then let him think they're palm trees.
And that goes back to almost what we were discussing about the dispensary, when those parents are so very worried about young children being exposed, they're themselves being the ones exposing the children to that. They're the ones actually telling their kids that it exists and telling their kids what they think it should mean, and are ingraining that idea in their kids' mind. But the problem is when you learn, we do that by challenging notions, right? You challenge what's comfortable and then you learn. You do something new. So if what you're given is that it's bad for you, there's a lot of people that want to rebel. That's kind of known as the teenage rebellion. I think it's something that's been happening for decades, and a lot of generations like to make that joke about the teenagers going off and smoking joints because it's cultural. We all know about it.
Connected to the hippie culture, the 60s, 70s.
But it goes back farther than that.
It goes way further back.
And the hippies were the ones that said world peace, let's take care of people.
Flower power.
Let's not drop bombs on other countries. Let's sit down at the negotiating table first. Let's think solutions that save the planet, that are sustainable. That's actually something that's been going on for centuries, honestly. You can find indigenous cultures all over the globe in every era that have been saying that up right until the present day, where they are screaming it for us to be sustainable and mindful.
Yeah, it was never taboo until the last 100-some-odd years.
It was about 100 years ago, because that was his name, Anslinger?
Yeah.
Was the name?
I think it was 23 or something like that, 1923 or something. That was the first prohibition. I'd have to look that up, but I know it was somewhere in the very early 1900s.
I remember thinking of it happening more around the 30s is really where that clamped down.
Where Reefer Madness those started coming out. Yeah.
Right, where Reefer Madness is that black and white movie, and I don't know if that was 30s. That might have been 50s maybe.
Oh, that is a good
one. I don't think it's back in the original day, but of course I don't have it in front of me to check, so don't quote me on that.
Reefer Madness is 1936.
Is it really?
Yes.
That is really the 30s.
Yes. And you know, that one right there,
that's 80 years old. That's over 80 years old.
So much hyperbolized rhetoric about the plant. Like, they were trying to basically, in that movie, trying to be like, oh, you smoke once and you'll turn into a psychopath obsessed with sex and murder.
That movie, I can't even call it a movie, that propaganda.
Yeah.
That piece of propaganda was so horrible in so many ways. It is so racist.
And then
it is so classist.
Honestly, in my opinion, there was nothing more harmful to this whole thing than the Reagans. Nancy, specifically.
Are you talking about her Just Say No campaign?
Yes.
I remember that campaign. Do you remember the DARE, D-A-R-E program? The DARE program stood for Drug Abuse Resistance Education.
Yeah, I mean, no, they've been trying to sit there and label cannabis as a drug for so long. And most of the people I know, it's not a drug in their book. It's a medicine.
However, with that labeling of drug, that is why we now have a medical classification for it. Because since it's already been shuffled into the drug classification category, it's kind of interesting how the pioneers of this whole industry now becoming mainstream, the people that have been fighting for cannabis for decades found a way to use the drug classification to the advantage of saying, hey, look, if we can find the ability to prove the medical therapeutic properties that we know it has, if we can figure out how to prove this to you, then we can get the ball rolling. And somehow they did. And it took years. And there's, oh my gosh, Jack Herrera is, I want to say, one of the pioneers back in the day, you know, that fought to educate people about this plant. What I want to say, that book, it's making me think of the name of that book that's called The Emperor Wears No Clothes. It goes all the way back into the hemp cannabis prohibition information, like in the history of it and the impact that the plant has had and the impact that the prohibition of the plant has had on societies.
You know, and also I've been hearing that there's been like a lot of push right now back on the Trump administration to reschedule cannabis off the narcotics list one, trying to push it down to the list two.
Right. This has been happening more and more often over the past few years. It's getting
And there's so much push right now on the administration that they're actually sitting there and trying to get like a public consensus and whatnot, supposedly, and trying to figure out, hey, is this what the public wants? But I mean, when you're talking about the Trump presidency, putting out a poll for something like that, it's going to be nothing but Trump followers that answer, I suppose, in my opinion.
Well, there's all sorts of interesting legislation going through. I hope that makes it personally, because it's just been proven how harmful the war on drugs has been. The war has not been on drugs. The war has been on the public citizenry. The war has been on personal use and freedom. The war has been on freedom of choice to live a life that you organize on your own, that you are not punished for making your own choices and decisions. I do understand that, you know, you're free to make your choice, but you're not free from the consequences of that choice. However, that doesn't apply to everything. And it's to me like someone saying, if you want to go home after work and you want to drink a beer or a shot of whiskey or tequila, all of those things are fine. But then you have all these legislators trying to say, but you can maybe only smoke a little bit of the flower, and you can't have any of the wax shatter, and you can't have any of these vape cartridge products, and you're not allowed to have anything in any flavors. It has to taste all like this weird, you know, the distillate that removes the flavor, and someone regulating the choices that you're supposed to have of cannabis, that would really bother people. There's so many people that love the plant and love the flavors, and these connoisseurs are going to be so upset when they get restricted, because there's going to be rules and legislation saying that you can't have flavored vape products. There already are issues like that, because you can't have flavored edibles in Washington state now.
Yeah. And they're probably also connected to like the Girl Scout cookies and all that from the names and same thing.
The CBD. And we're talking even just CBD, not even THC.
Oh,
the
yes.
CBD edibles.
The
you
CBD
are not allowed to have.
Being banned in Washington state. I just saw that article today.
You can't have those at all. Now that to me boggles my mind. So you're saying that if somebody has a pain issue, they don't want any of the mental psychoactive properties. They don't need relaxing. They don't have stress or anxiety. That is not what they're using the product for. They're using it for the physical properties, the CBD that's going to help their muscle. It's going to maybe help with the sciatica or twisted back or nerve damage from an accident, something going on. And you're saying that they must, what, smoke their CBD product or get a tincture or something like that? I'm not even sure if tinctures would be like, you know what I mean? The little droplets that you could drop in coffee or juice. That might be ruled out. Yeah. Soon as well, too. But you can't go and get CBD gummy bears or chocolates or something like that edible, because you could have that with lunch discreetly. You could dose yourself. You could take away the pain after work. It's not going to affect your performance. It's not going to make you.
That's what bothers me, too, with this one, too, is because in the human body, I mean, THC is created in very low quantities, but CBD is actually more prevalent in the system and created by the system in the human body a lot more naturally. So they're trying to ban something that's naturally created in the human body.
And that right there is its own podcast of information. There are tons of podcasts out there. There are loads of podcasts that cover that, to be honest. But we don't. We don't have that much time left, to be honest. I'm not sure if you realize it, Corey. You and I have been talking for close to an hour now.
Nice.
Yeah. So
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I guess that is it for today. I think I'm going to go smoke a fat one. I need to go chillax. I don't know about you.
I might have to do a lot of audio editing. I don't know.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Go light one. Enjoy the rest of your evening. This has been Trippy, Protest, Politics, and
Potpourri.
I'm your host, Corelia.
And I'm Leslie McLam. Thank you for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.
Peace out.
KBOO Portland.